Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, August 23rd, 2014. This is episode 1111. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Citrix ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with Citrix ShareFile. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Lantronics, makers of the X-Print server. Print from any Android phone, tablet, Chromebook, or Kindle Fire to virtually any printer. For more information, visit xprintserver.com/twit and enter the code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk tech. Yes, indeed. Computers, the internet, home theater, all that jazz. 88 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, you'd like to talk high tech, a little hand holding on the information superhighway. That's what I'm here for. 888-827-5536. The website is techguylabs.com. And you can go there if you want information about anything I say. You don't have to write anything down. We make notes of everything, put all the links up there. And it's free. You don't have to pay or anything to get in, unlike other sites. TechGuyLabs.com. Well, let's see. What's been going on in the world of tech? The Windows Store, a cesspool of scams. This is kind of depressing news. You know, Microsoft has really kind of an uphill battle convincing people to buy Windows Phone. Not easy. And part of the problem, of course, is the fact that the Windows Store itself has the Windows Phone Store has so few apps, and particularly not the apps people expect if they've used Android or iOS. It's getting better. It's a lot better than it was. But there's a few things missing, chiefly for me, Google. I wish there were more Google apps in there. And that's not Microsoft's fault. That's Google's fault. It's anti-competitive. They're not going to put their stuff in Windows Store. They're going to make you buy Android. Although they do put it in the iPhone Store. It's easy for them not to put stuff in Windows Store. The Windows Phone is really about 1% of the total phone sales in the U.S. It's not huge. And yet they have such great phones. A new one was announced this week. The HTC One, which is one of my favorite Android phones, HTC's decided to make the same exact phone and just put Windows Phone on it, and it's beautiful. Nokia makes some of the best phones in the business, and they're all Windows phones. But Microsoft apparently is so anxious to get the numbers up in the App Store that they're willing to let anything in, and they're really not policing it very well. Article at howtogeek.com about I'll just read the headline. The Windows Store is a cesspool of scams. Why doesn't Microsoft care? This is specifically talking about the Windows 8 Store, but it applies to the Windows Phone Store just as much. These are supposedly curated stores, and you know, I think when we think curated store, we think iTunes, you know, the App Store for Windows or for iPhone. That's the gold standard for curated. Apple won't let, you know, they won't even let adult apps in. They won't let Bitcoin apps and BitTorrent apps in. They keep it clean, and presumably they also keep it free of viruses and scams. But as HowToGeek points out, that's not what's going on in the Microsoft Windows Store. They show a screenshot. This is for the Windows 8 App Store, the Metro App Store. They show a screenshot. If you search for VLC, and we talk about VLC all the time, the Video LAN client. And I'm looking at this screenshot, and there are 15 different apps with the Video LAN client logo. There actually is an official Windows 8 Video LAN client that's free. And then there are a lot of others, including some as much as $5. One is called the VLC Player Download, $4.99. The description says, this app helps you know how to download and install VLC Player. Actually, it doesn't even say that. It says, this app helps the users to know how to download, install, and why it is. Scam! Another one, download VLC Player for $1.99. Now, it says in the description, VLC is a free open-source cross-platform multimedia player. That's cut and paste from their description. They're just hoping to trick people. And I bet you people pay. There's an app in the Windows Metro Store for iTunes. It's not Apple's iTunes app. It's an $8.99 app. You know the Apple app is free. That helps users to know how to use and download iTunes using Apple's iTunes logo. Wow. Wow. Just, this is terrible. And it's amazing that Microsoft doesn't care more about this. Especially since when you do a system search on Windows 8 now, it searches the App Store as well as the web and everything else. And so all of these phony apps show up in system searches. Microsoft, according to HowToGeek, and I agree, just wants a big store. They don't care about quality. They care about quantity. Because, unfortunately, you and I say, how big's your store? How many apps do you have? And that's a shame. Last year, Microsoft had a promotion. They paid developers $100 for each app they submitted to the Windows Store or the Windows Phone Store. Up to $2,000. So developers just said, well, good, I'll do 20 bogus apps. I'll get my $2,000 and move on. And if somebody's stupid enough to pay $1.99, they deserve it. And yet Microsoft does a review and approve these apps. So just point it out. It ain't all it ought to be. It's a little disappointing, frankly. And it's not what you need right now if you're buying Windows 8 or you're buying Windows Phone. You really need a better experience, I think. We're waiting. You know, we're very close now. We're, 2 weeks away, 2 weeks and a few days away from Apple's iPhone announcement. And, of course, the rumor mill is heating up. The drums are beating. Bum, 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 bum. We've now seen from Foxconn itself specifications. Foxconn makes these phones, so this has got to be credible. For two different iPhones, yes, a 4.7-inch iPhone 6, and I'm kind of stunned. I didn't think they were going to do it. I thought it was a bad rumor. A 5.5-inch iPhone, a ginormous iPhone, an iPhone as big as the Galaxy Note, bigger than many Android phones, 5.5 inches. It looks good. The pictures I've seen, it looks good. They're making it very thin. I saw another story, I think from Reuters, saying they're having trouble making it. Because they want it so thin, they've changed the process, and they're having trouble getting components. Might be prepared. So this happens every year, but it might be in very short supply initially. It might be under very short supply. We're excited. Now, of course, in order to beat the iPhone to market, you have HTC announcing its new Windows phone this week. Next week, September 4th, we're looking for Google, and it's Google Motorola still. They sold Motorola to Lenovo, but that transaction hasn't happened. So Motorola / Google will announce, finally, their Google Android Wear Watch and their new Motorola X. That was my phone. My phone of the year last year was a Motorola X. I just really loved it. So that'll be interesting. See if that – I suspect it'll be bigger. We've seen some, again, leaks – that it's 5 inches, should have a better camera, should have a higher res display. But I hope it has many of the features that made the Moto X so amazing. Kind of a pure Google experience, but then with some very useful add-ons. The ability to, for instance, just talk right to the phone at any time and have it respond and do things. It knows where you know, when you're awake, it knows when you're sleeping, it knows when you're in a meeting, it knows when you're driving. All sorts of interesting capabilities. I'd like to see that. Speaking of Google, YouTube is announcing a new subscription music service called Music Key. Would you subscribe? You know, I watch how the young people, you know who you are, I watch them, they don't watch MTV. They don't watch TV at all. And you know, when they listen to music together, at least in the living room, they do it through YouTube. In fact, it's not unusual for me to come in and see my 20-year-old son and his buddies all with their laptops and phones out playing different songs from YouTube. They're almost competing with each other. $9.99. I'm not sure what you'll get over and above existing YouTube, but we'll find out soon. All right, let's go to the phones. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That is the phone ranger on the other side there. She is Heather Hammond. Hey, Heather. What? What are you? You know, I snuck up behind you. Snuck up behind you. How you doing?
Great.
Welcome. You've been answering the phones, I noticed, for the last 20 minutes or so. What the heck's going on?
I love Joe in Orlando. He has a great question for you, and you may even find some value in thinking this through yourself.
Wow. That's exciting.
Because I know you get maybe bored.
I get bored. I am easily bored. I'm ADD. I have to have three. Do you know ADD people who watch? They'll watch TV. They'll also have their iPad open, and some of them will be on the phone texting.
There you go.
At the same time. That's me.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Joe, or Joe, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, good morning, Leo. It's Joe, WX4ADX. How are you?
Another ham. They're coming out of the woodwork. Well, nice to meet you, Joe, W6TWT. Although I have never been on the air with it.
Well, actually, you have. We worked on the Start Your Grand Opening.
That's right. That was it. Yeah, 3 years ago.
An honor for me.
One of these days. I got it. I, you know what? I talk all day on the radio. I don't really want to go home and talk some more on the radio. Although Art Bell does it. He'll do a show and then go on the air and spend 3 hours talking to people.
Absolutely.
I just want to go to bed.
So I have a quick question for you.
Yes.
So, you know, hams easily get sedentary. And I, like many people, run a small business and I have a home office, and I have this amazing brand new delivered from Southern California Soul F85 commercial treadmill. And my idea is to get exercise here at home because, you know, I work a lot of hours like many. And I have the new Linksys WRT1900 AC wireless router. Love it. One of the best routers I've ever had. I'd like to get your ideas and ideas from listeners on what I could do to make my workouts more fun. Meaning, it's not that I don't mind walking. I want to take my mind off of walking and have fun. So, should it be virtual reality goggles? Should it
No,
be...
you'll throw up.
Okay.
It would take your mind off it, though. The exercise wouldn't be the most painful thing. Problem with virtual reality glasses and goggles, and I've used them a lot, and they make me nauseous every time, is that you feel like you're moving, but your inner ear says he's not moving that way. It's a sure way to seasickness.
Right now, what I do is I just use my iPhone 5 or my iPad, and I watch episodes of either Ham Nation or TWiT.
Excellent choice. That would be my recommendation. You know, we have a TV set up in front of our treadmill, so I can always watch TV. The big thing right now, though, a lot of people are doing this, is treadmill desks. Have you ever thought about that?
I've not. Can you tell me what that is?
Well, the idea is, you know, and you could do this with your existing treadmill, although a lot of times what people do is buy something that's made that way. In fact, John Slanina out here has a treadmill desk. John, who makes that treadmill desk that you use? 'Cause,
Lifespan.
Now, you already have a great treadmill, so there's no reason to do this. But you could maybe look at something like the Up Desk or a movable desk that allows you to put it around the treadmill. The key on that is not going fast because it's very hard to – as you probably noticed, even just using your iPad, it's very hard to do anything if you're going more than, say, 3 miles an hour. You're bumping around like crazy, and it's hard to get steady. The people who use treadmill desks set it for a fairly slow pace but just walk the whole time they're at work. And that's crazy talk, but it worked. Lifespan is a very well-known, in fact, I have a Lifespan treadmill, so they're a very well-known maker of treadmills, but they also make treadmill desks. And if you search for treadmill desk, you'll see a lot of people have treadmill desks that are modified, basically a desk around a treadmill. If you look at Lifespan's website, the treadmill desks are basically desks and a treadmill without the stuff in front. The controls for the treadmill are built into the desk. That's the only difference.
One other quick question if you have a moment.
Yeah.
And that is, say I go with a Samsung flat screen TV, say I bring in a 50-inch flat screen TV on wheels, that way I can move it around and get it comfortably positioned. What type of media could I stream in on that card? In other words, what type of services would really, really work well for me to watch? I mean, obviously, I could still do my episodes, Twitter.
Do you have cable in there? Do you have Wi-Fi?
I do. Yeah, cable. Oh, right. Yeah, cable modem, 30 meg.
Whatever you like. I try to watch Simpsons episodes because they're just about the right length.
Okay.
But I try to watch something that's a half hour long. That's a half an hour on the treadmill. Lisa likes to watch The Killing because she likes to, which is a very dramatic murder mystery spook show. And she likes that because it keeps her engaged and anything that will keep you engaged. I find shows like Game of Thrones kind of hard to watch while you're – why am I – this? You should be calling an exercise guru, not a technology guru on this one. We do have a Chromecast hooked up, and that gives you some interesting choices because, for instance, I like to watch exercise videos while I'm exercising, and so that makes it very easy to do that kind of thing. You can get videos from your iPad. From your iPad, from YouTube, will play to the Chromecast, so you can choose videos on YouTube. And in a way, having it on a big screen helps a little bit with the head bob issue. On a treadmill. I think this is a great idea. I mean, look, we all need to exercise more. I should probably do that during the show. I've tried them. It's not perfect for a radio show. You get kind of breathless. But so you set it pretty low. You set it to, what do you do, John? A mile and a half an hour? Probably not more than 2 miles an hour, right? You do 2 miles an hour?
Well, I can't.
Or while you're trying to work? Yeah, it's hard to work while you're doing it. He says no more than 2.4, but even that's fairly... That's a brisk pace.
Watch TV and listen to music
yeah.
at 3.5.
Yeah. But if you were writing, doing email, it'd be hard to do that unless you were going pretty slowly.
Yeah, and reading.
Yeah, and reading, your head's bobbing. Yeah, I think reading's not ideal for that kind of thing. But, boy, you know, it's interesting to watch the technology generation attempt to apply their passion for technology to their need to exercise. Most of us technology folks are pretty sedentary. And so I sit on an exercise ball that keeps me kind of moving around a little bit. We see Fitbits and Fuel Bands, all sorts of fitness bands. And they really aren't, they're just glorified pedometers. The thing that makes them appealing to tech aficionados is they tie into your smartphone. You can keep track of stuff. And most importantly, it's unlike a pedometer, you can set a goal and they will reward you. All of them do something. The Fuel Band does a little fireworks display on your wrist. And the reward of reaching your goal isn't, you know, it's funny what a big difference that makes. Because if your goal is 10,000 steps, which everybody says that's what it should be, and you're 9,000 steps at the end of the day, you're so close, you're going to go for a walk. You're going to take the stairs more because you're just trying to get that step count up, at least if you're competitive. And I think a lot of geeks are kind of competitive, so... That's the other thing that a lot of these do is the social aspect. If you use a Fitbit, for instance, you can have Fitbit friends and compete to get ranked who took the most steps this week. I love beating Kevin Rose on my Fitbit, which I rarely do. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by, our podcast, I should say, today brought to you by our good friends at Citrix ShareFile. And I mean that in more than one way. Yes, they buy ads on the podcast and on the podcast network, but they also facilitate the sharing of files for the radio show. So in a way, they're brought to you, literally bringing you the radio show. ShareFile solves a problem that a lot of people have run into in business. In business, of course, attaching files to emails, very common. Presentations, proposals, resumes, all sorts of stuff. But it's not so hot if you need to keep it secure, if you need to make sure it gets there. In fact, it's not so hot because I'm telling everybody, don't open email attachments. They're dangerous. That's why ShareFile is such a good solution. It is a secure way to send a file, not through the email, but as a secure link that keeps control in your hands. You control who has access, their level of permission. You can require a password. You can require an email address. You can even say they can only download this file for 1 week or 1 month or 1 day. You could say this file, they can only download it once, then it expires. You have all sorts of control over it. Plus, you're not sending a file through the public internet where people can see what's in the file. That means share file, Citrix share file is HIPAA compliant, compliant with regulations in the financial industry. It really is great. In fact, click the industry links at sharefile.com and you'll see how well ShareFile works in a variety of industries. It's got your branding on it. They do have an Outlook plugin, which means if you're used to sending email, as most are in business through Outlook, this will look just like an email attachment, but it's not. It even supports e-signatures, which is really great. You can actually say on the ShareFile, get signature. That's using the right signature technology. Citrix ShareFile is incredible. Solutions for accounting, engineering and architecture, construction, healthcare. Yes, it's HIPAA compliant, insurance, legal, manufacturing, and life sciences. This is such a great solution. I want you to try it right now by going to ShareFile.com. And if you're in business, but you're not the person who decides this stuff, show this to your CIO or your IT director. But ask them to click the link at the top of the page, or you do that too, that says podcast listeners, because that way we're going to get credit. You want to write in tech guy, because you heard this on the Tech Guy podcast. One word, tech guy. Then choose your industry and customize it. I use ShareFile to send audio to the radio stations. It is the easiest way. And I know that the people on the other end may not be technically sophisticated, but it makes it so simple for them. They see my brand, my label. They see a big download button. It couldn't be easier. And I know when they've got it. I don't have to worry about it. They have a folder-based, folder-level synchronization for Mac and PC. They have widgets. They have all sorts of ways to do this. It really is great. No wonder. It's from Citrix. Citrix ShareFile. Try it today. Receive a 30-day free trial. Click the microphone at the top of the homepage and enter techguy at ShareFile.com. That's ShareFile.com. Click the microphone. Use the offer code techguy. We thank ShareFile so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. These guys are great. Citrix ShareFile. It's time to talk home theater. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru, is about to join us. You know, we were talking about exercise, and I am so mean and nasty about Comcast. I'm going to give Comcast a plug. Can you believe this? Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Are you all ready for this?
Testify.
Well, I had heard good things. Comcast, as all cable companies, they have just terrible set-top boxes, right? That's why people use Roku, Apple TV, Boxy, all these other set-top boxes, because the set-top boxes from your cable company tend to be very old and slow and dumb. But Comcast, made a pretty strong research initiative to make a good set-top box. They call it the X1. And I didn't have one for a long time because you had to have a triple play from Comcast, which I didn't want to do. But I was in the Comcast store the other day, and they talked me into getting the X1. And it's a really big improvement on a cable system set-top box. For one thing, if you have more than one TV, you have one DVR, and the rest can act as if they're on that DVR. So you record it on one, and every TV in the house can see it, can see the saved shows. You can program the DVR. You can program the DVR from your smartphone. You can run the set-top box from your smartphone. You can program it from the web. So it's just really, because the DVR is online, it really, suddenly everything is very convenient and flexible. And the reason that came up, and I thought about that, is because when you're exercising, you don't want to be you could watch live TV, but it's nice to watch, either be watching Netflix or something where you can skip through the commercials and you can watch four shows at once if you feel like you're in the mood. For instance, you know that FX is doing a Simpsons marathon right now, Scott? Did you know that?
Oh, yeah.
12 days. This is how long The Simpsons has been on for, 25 years. It's going to take them 12 days to run every show back-to-back concurrently.
24-7 for 12 days.
Consecutively, I mean. 24-7 for 12 days. And there are a number of Simpson episodes that have never been released on DVD. Season 4 with Marge and Monorail, which is many consider the greatest Simpsons episode of all time, later today. And so I'm going to DVR it because I'm finally going to have a copy of this thing. You can't buy it on iTunes. I've searched. It's never been released. So now I have a good number. I'm not doing all 12 days. But I have a good number of Simpsons episodes. And I find 22 minutes is exactly right on the treadmill. Then I do some weights. So just a little tip. But I do like the X1. I've been so mean to Comcast. I feel like I should be, to be fair, if they do something well, I should say it. And I think that they've really done this well. This is a very impressive set-top box. In fact, I have a TiVo, and I'm almost now regretting spending all that money on the TiVo, because most of the functionality of the TiVo I can do on the Comcast box. All right. Scott, you're just shutting up. You have nothing to say about...
Oh, I was just waiting for you, man.
I know what you've got today.
I got something special today.
Value Electronics has completed... You talked about it this week on Home Theater Geeks, your podcast.
Yep.
They've completed the ratings of televisions.
Yes, and for the first time, a tie was declared.
Wow. And it better, one of them better be my TV.
Well, I'll tell you this. You will be happy to hear this. The participants, the people who come in and vote, chose a particular always do. They choose a TV by their vote that's tabulated. And then the experts, the calibrators who actually calibrated all the TVs in the shootout, pick their favorite among all of them.
Yeah.
The calibrators picked the Samsung OLED,
which is the most expensive TV in the batch there.
Well, no, it's not.
It's not?
No.
Oh, good.
They happen to have a Samsung 105-inch.
Oh, that shouldn't be allowed.
21:9 super widescreen.
That shouldn't be
$120,000. Okay.
Was that part of the shootout? This is, so we should just explain. We've been talking about it because we've been leading up to it. This is the kind of the event of the HDTV year. Value Electronics, a retailer in Scarsdale, New York, gets what they consider to be the top TVs. In this case, they did both. They had both UHD and HDTVs. They had kind of two categories. Correct. And then they bring in professional calibrators, professional reviewers, but they also let the individuals, normal people like you and me, rate them, and then they pick the best TVs. So the pros, which is surprising, like last year's Samsung 55-inch OLED, and that's an HDTV.
Correct. It wasn't last year's winner. Last year's winner was the Samsung F.
But I'm just saying it came out last year, didn't it?
Oh, yes, it did.
Yeah.
And it's on its way out from the market now. Yeah. It won't be available much longer. And it was $9,000 for an OLED.
Can you not rub that in?
I'm sorry. But the good news is that the pros picked it as their favorite among all of them.
Yeah.
And we're talking $120,000 TVs. We're talking UHD TVs that are their UHD selection was in the 79 to 85 inch range, so much bigger.
Wow.
The OLED was 55 inches. They also had the LG 55 inch OLED, the new EC9300, which is only $3,500. And they had last year's winner, of course, the F8500 plasma, the only plasma in this year's flat panel shootout. Now, as I said, the calibrators chose the Samsung KN55S9C OLED, which is the one you have, as their favorite TV among all of them. The rest of the group who voted, they depends on how you parse the votes, which is why there's a tie. They judge the TVs in six different picture quality categories. And out of those six, the LG OLED topped four of them. The F8500 plasma, last year's winner, topped the other two. None of the LCDs topped any picture quality category.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which is very interesting.
Because that's the best-selling TVs of all.
Well, LCDs certainly are.
Yeah.
And UHD, Ultra HD, is certainly coming up. So if you parse the data as to who won the most categories, picture quality categories, the LG OLED won the popular vote.
Sounds like OLED really is the format of the future.
It is, I think. It is the replacement of plasma, really, for the best picture quality. Now, it's not without its problems. There was some color shift issues off-center. There were some, what are a technical term, gamma tracking issues. I won't go into that right now, but that's why the calibrators chose the Samsung OLED, because it had a better gamma. It had better color fidelity or accuracy, if you will. But if you take the score that each TV made in each of these six categories and you average those up for the overall average score, the Samsung Plasma won the popular vote. Last year's winner, an old TV that's almost on its, that's essentially on its way out. It's very, won't be available much longer.
Nobody's
at all.
Nobody's going to make plasma anymore. But somebody must, must be continuing plasma.
Well, LG, as far as I know, still is, but they're the only company left standing. I don't think they're going to be very much longer.
Wow.
So the F8500 plasma was considered the winner. By this particular way of looking at the data. And the LG OLED was the other one. So in other words, the emissive displays won all around. And the LCDs, which are called transmissive displays because the light has to pass through an LCD panel, none of them won anything, even though they're much more expensive, much larger, and generally much brighter.
Wow. Scott Wilkinson, he's at the AVS Forum, editor-in-chief there, and he does our Home Theater Geeks podcast every week at twit.tv/HTG. Thanks for those results. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We've been talking off air. I was talking a little bit with Scott. Scott, by the way, happy birthday. He's celebrating today. Congratulations on making it another year. We were talking off the air with Scott about exercising as well. And I think that one of the things that's cool about technology, at least us technologists love to use technology to help us exercise, whether it's a log of exercise, our food logs. And then there's this is kind of an outlier, but I think it's really fun, a program for the iPhone called, I think it's called Run Zombies. And it's a great idea. You're listening. It's for your run. It's for running. And it's a soundtrack. And it's kind of like a game, except that it starts off with a whole, you know, backstory and zombies. The zombie apocalypse is happening and you have to run to survive. And it'll tell you left, right, quick turn. They're coming down that alley. Turn around. I'm sorry. It's called Zombies, Run. And it is now on Android as well as that's good. I can ignore it. I can put it on my Android phone and ignore it just as I have been on my iPhone now. They say 800,000 people have used it. There's the zombie chase interval training. There's 160 missions. And if, you know, whatever it takes to motivate you, right? If it's zombies coming at you, that's a good one. 80. I love the idea. And it really, it actually sounds, I mean, it's scary. It sounds like they're coming for you. So you wear your iPhone, your headphones, and you actually are running away from zombies.
A bottle of water, a radio, and a box of batteries. 2.4 kilometers, 17 minutes.
We won't play the video from the website, but you get the idea. 8888 ask Leo. That's the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Judy in Placentia. I talked to Judy last week. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Well, I think I'm making the big decision. I'm going to get an iPhone.
I think that's the right thing to do. Now, I'd wait till September 9th.
Okay, I can do that.
Yeah.
Now, the only other question that they asked...
I should give you the backstory. I remember it, but for those who don't, Judy is buying her first smartphone.
Correct.
And called me last week saying, well, what should I get? And, truth is, there are so many good choices. It's hard to go wrong, but I think for their first iPhone... For smartphone, an iPhone is a very good choice, especially these new ones. They're going to be thin, beautiful. They'll be very nice.
Great. Okay. Now, my other question that I have that they asked me when I was looking at them is how much data do I want? And I'm going like, I don't know. I have to go.
Do you mean data as in storage on the phone, size of the phone, or do you mean data as in your data plan?
Yeah, what in the plan. So for what I'm going to...
I would start with 2 gigabytes a month.
Yes, exactly. That's
the basic one. I think that's $30. And you know, the way it works, if you look, I'm not sure which carrier you're talking about, but I think most of them, it's the next gigabyte is $10. So if 1 month you go over, it's not the end of the world.
Okay.
And then you can adjust it at any time.
Okay. Well, they had suggested, they said, well, 1 gigabyte, is it gigabyte?
Gigabyte, that's right.
Okay, 1 gigabyte is where you start.
And yeah, that's too low for most people. You're going to do web surfing and mail. Are you going to watch movies?
No, I basically want it for text and talk, the GPS, a little email, and a little web usage.
Well, what you know, there is a program on the iPhone you should pay attention to that shows your usage of data, and,
okay,
and just watch it every month. And if you find, I think two is a good starting point for most people.
Okay.
You probably won't go over that. And if you do, it won't be by a lot, so it won't be hugely expensive.
Okay.
You're not going to do 10 gigabytes on the first month by any means.
Yeah.
You just be, you know what, be kind of aware that it's free to use Wi-Fi. So
exactly.
When you're doing big data things, mm-hmm, if you're at home or at work or somewhere where you have Wi-Fi, just do it there.
Uh-huh.
And most programs will let you check a box. For instance, music downloaders will say that you can check a box, say only download when I'm on Wi-Fi. So there's lots of ways to control it. You might be able to get it down to a gigabyte. And if you do, you can always call them and step down. Remember that a change in your plan extends the contract.
Okay.
In most cases. So that means another 2 years. But if you do it in the first few months, big deal.
Okay. No problem.
I think no more than two. That should be plenty.
Sounds great.
All right. Hey,
thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Please call back in a few weeks. So you're going to get it. So September, let me just give you the timeline. September 9th, Apple will announce it. There's always a delay. Typically, in the last few years, it's been a 10-day delay. It's been the Friday of the week following.
Okay.
That you can get there. And this year, I think it's going to be in short supply. So what I would do is when they make the announcement and you see the news stories about it, they'll say the day that they're going to allow pre-orders. That's when you immediately want to go online at the Apple Store and pre-order it. If you order it in the first few hours of pre-orders, you'll get one.
Okay.
And they mail it to you. And then you take it to the phone store where, you know, whichever carrier you're going to use. Was it Verizon or AT&T? I can't remember.
No, I have T-Mobile. Which
T-Mobile.
Is wonderful, but yeah. I have to change to Verizon only because my son lives in North Carolina and the area he lives does.
That's right. I remember that. Yeah. So go to Verizon and activate the phone. That's easy to do. So get it from Apple is my suggestion.
Okay. So I go to the store and ask for a pre-order?
No, you can do it online.
Okay.
You have a computer?
I do.
Yeah. Store.apple.com. They will say September 9th, they'll say, and you can pre-order it. Sometimes it's today. Usually it's Thursday or Friday.
Okay.
So they'll say you could pre-order Friday, midnight Friday. You go on, like, because seriously, there's this, and I think this one supply will be more constrained than typical.
Okay.
When they have a new model like this, it's completely redesigned. That's when they get supply problems. So the midnight on that day, the day that they allow pre-orders, first allow pre-orders, you go to the store.apple.com and you order that one.
Okay.
You're then going to see, by the way, a choice of size of memory. You don't have to worry about that. Get the smallest or the next one up, 16 or 32 gigabytes.
Okay.
Because you don't have a lot of stuff to store.
At midnight. It's Thursday night?
Well, they'll tell you. We don't know yet.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So watch with the news releases, or you could even go to the Apple Store on September 9th, and they'll say, pre-order yours Thursday.
Okay.
Pay attention to that. You want to order it right then. And then during the order process, they'll say which carrier you'll push Verizon and all of that stuff.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. Now, is it less expensive to buy it from the Apple Store or buy it from Verizon?
It's exactly the same everywhere.
Okay. Gotcha.
Apple controls that very tightly.
I see. Okay.
And I would get the new one. You'll notice that you could get the old one. What happens is the old one will go down a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I would get the new one.
Okay.
Well, you're starting out. You might as well get a phone that's going to last you 2 years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, boy, they sure didn't tell you that you had to include all this technology in your retirement plan.
That's right.
Worked a little longer.
That's right. Who knew?
Yeah.
Who knew it was going to be this expensive?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But boy, I tell you what. In fact, many people now are replacing their computer with a tablet, and maybe even replacing their tablet with a smartphone. You can do everything on your smartphone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Have fun.
I will.
It's fun.
Thank you.
Don't get stressed. It's fun.
Okay.
It'd be easy to get stressed about this. It's not stressful. It's fun. It's exciting. It's like you're going to a foreign country. Which, you know, the same thing. It could be, you know, I'm going to France. It could be stressful. I don't know the language. Where am I going to be? What am I going to do? But it also can be exhilarating. And think of it that way. This is a brave new world you're entering. It is exciting. It is fun. It's the future. And yeah, it's, you know, there can be trials and tribulations along the way, but nothing nobody's ever done before. You know, and you've got friends, people like me, who will help you out. Bill, hang on. You'll be next when we return. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey. How are you today, Leo Laporte, the tech guy? Hour number two of the Tech Guy program, episode 1111. That's lucky, right? Or is it unlucky? I can never. 11's lucky, yeah. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also use Skype to reach us toll free. And ask your question. Bill's on the line from Phelan, California. Our next caller. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm well. Thanks for holding on.
All right, no problem. This is Bill Blake, your Planet of the Apes actor friend, you might remember.
Hey, how's it going?
Not too bad. I've got a question for you, and I've got a really, really cool update you might want to hear about.
Bill wanted to make a YouTube video channel of character work he does in an ape costume, right? Is that my right?
Well, that and other characters, too, because I am an actor. I do more than chimpanzees.
I am more than an ape. All right, okay.
Yeah. Well, anyway, when I had directed you to the YouTube channel a couple of years ago when we first started talking about this, you saw my thumbnail, and my thumbnail had me with my camera stabilizer, and we got into a conversation about the maker movement, about making things.
And
you had told me at the time that you were going to have a companion television show.
We never got around to it. Yeah.
Oh, no. That's a shame.
Yeah, we're big fans of the maker movement, and a lot of geeks are, too, and just so people understand, it kind of all began some years ago when Make Magazine came out. It was a magazine full of projects that people could do. A lot of parents did them with their kids. And what it was really about is getting back to making things, you know, where our digital technology comes, you know, already baked in most cases. And in many cases, it's all sealed up. We don't really know what's going on inside. We couldn't take it apart even if we wanted to. So the Make movement was about let's make it accessible. Let's get in there. Let's get our hands dirty and start building things. And in your case, you built a camera stabilizer.
Yes, especially in the film industry when you're working on low budgets. I can't afford a $70,000 stabilizer. So I took all the best elements and I designed one of my own. And it was just my time to machine it to do the milling and the lathe work and everything.
Yeah, well, it's awesome. I mean, and I love the idea because I want people to understand how technology works. A lot of times making is about technology. Sometimes it's as simple as, you know, soldering a circuit, but sometimes it's more complicated, building robots and things like that. And right. It can be physical things. It could be a trebuchet catapult, things like that. The next Maker Faire, by the way, is up in New York, September 20th and 21st. If you want to see, you don't have to be a maker to go to a Maker Faire. But if you want to see what people are doing, the Maker Faires are truly amazing. The World Maker Fair is September 20th and 21st in New York City at the New York Hall of Science. And you can go online to a Maker Faire and find out more. MakerFAIRE.com. Truly exciting. Truly. This is the World Maker Fair. Sounds like it's a big deal. And then it's going to be in Rome in October. So the movement is spreading big time.
It certainly is. Can I give you the update now?
Yeah, tell me about what's happened. So first of all, what's your YouTube channel again?
The YouTube channel is Bill Blake SPFX. All together, no spaces in it.
All right. Bill Blake SPFX, special effects, right?
Yes. And I still don't have anything about the ape thing up there, but there's going to be more going up soon. That's what I'm going to tell you about right now. It turns out in our little town of Phelan here, it's only about 18,000 people, a business associate of mine hooked me up with a maker educator, and I just did a documentary for him that documented a school class called a STEAM class, science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics class. They've put arts in it now. And catapults is what they ask the kids to make. They give them a handful of parts, and they were supposed to make catapults that would throw a rubber ball through.
Kids love catapults. Kids love catapults, don't they?
Yeah. Exactly. And this was one school that let them build them and didn't consider them something like low-grade
a weapon.
You know? Yeah. Anyway, because of that and the documentary, I've been invited to, believe it or not, in Hesperia, California, little Hesperia near Victorville in Las Vegas, is a film festival on September the 6th. It's as with my camera stabilizer. We're doing a live makeup demonstration with a gorilla from Planet of the Apes. Classic gorilla, because it's hard to make digital apes make personal appearances. And, I'm going to have the Maker documentary there, and then I'm going to post it on YouTube after that. And can I give the website for the film festival?
Yeah, please.
Scott Wilkinson may be interested in this, too, because it's going to be state-of-the-art digital projection in a multiplex cinema. Two of the cinemas are being set aside for all of the entries in the festival, all the winners to be shown. And it's going to be just a few square blocks. Everything is within a civic area where there's a park, an amphitheater, the theaters, the city hall, and the library. I'm going to be doing my seminar in the library. So if it's okay, let me give the website.
You bet.
Okay. It's Desert Rocks, R-O-C-K-S. Fame@.org.
DesertRocksFame.org, and you could find out more about the Hesperia Desert Rocks Film Festival. Bill, there's a listener in our chat room, Magpie, who wants to get a hold of you, old friend. Either visit our chat room, or can they get a hold of you through the YouTube channel? Is that the easiest way if they want to do that?
Yeah, I can just give my email address. I don't mind doing it.
All right.
Okay, it's WilliamFBlake@gmail.com.
WilliamFBlake@gmail.com. Bill, it's great to talk to you. Congratulations.
You too. And maybe Scott wants me to come and see some of the state-of-the-art digital projection. I don't think there's any real film. There's going to be about 35 films shown from all over the world.
Scott's listening right now, so I see him listening.
Great.
And making
great,
notes. Great. Thanks, Bill. Great to talk to you. Dennis, Thousand Oaks, T.O., Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, he's listening to the radio, so in about 40 seconds, watch, this is fun. He's going to suddenly realize that he's on the... Hey, how are you? Good to talk to you, Dennis. No. See, the problem with listening to the radio, just so you know, there's a little delay. Actually, there's a lot of delay between what you hear on the radio and what's actually happening. Dennis? All right. Neil in Hermosa Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Neil.
Hey, Leo. How are you, sir?
I'm well. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. A long-time listener. First time I've actually called you. What's going on?
Yeah.
What's going on is, I don't know if you can help me or not, but primarily in Chrome, if I watch a video, any video, embedded video on Facebook or something, but about 90% of the time, the whole computer just locks up and it just kind of buzzes.
Yeah, that's too bad. A couple of things possible. First of all, I make sure you have up-to-date video drivers. What kind of computer is it?
It's an Asus laptop.
Okay, it's a laptop. Yeah, make sure. And how much RAM do you have in the thing?
Oh, I should have started Bellarc.
Yeah, it's all right. I would keep the Chrome updated. Chrome, when you update it, automatically updates Flash. That's one of the advantages of using Chrome with Flash. And Flash, of course, is what's being used to play back those Facebook videos. It's possible that there is a memory issue, that you're out of memory, because Chrome is notorious on using an awful lot of memory. If this happens when you have a lot of tabs open, close some tabs and see if it's better. That'll reduce the memory footprint on Chrome. But more likely, it's a video driver issue. And one other thing to try, and I don't know, it depends on how old this computer is. A few years ago, computers were not fast enough to play back video without dropping frames. So in the video devices control panel, they had a setting for accelerating the video. What that really did is it eliminated the CPU. It just blasted the video onto the screen because the computer couldn't keep up with the video. But nowadays, that's a compatibility issue in many cases. So make sure your video settings that you do not have acceleration turned on. I know that's counterintuitive. Turn off acceleration. On older machines, that often fixes problems. And it could just be a bad video driver. Obviously, everything worked at one point. Nobody would ship a computer that couldn't play back Facebook or YouTube video. But somewhere, something's gotten corrupted along the way. And those are the things to check. Turn off hardware acceleration. Update your video drivers. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Where's my Lantronics box? Oh, you know what? People keep stealing my X-Print server. I love the X-Print server. We've been using them here at the Brick House Studio quite a bit. X-Print server allows you... We've talked to you before about the X-Print server for AirPrint. This is their newest. It's a Google Cloud Print solution. So this is the only print server, the first print server officially certified by Google for cloud print and Android printing. So basically, what this means is you can print from any Android device, any computer, anywhere to your printer using Google Cloud Print. Now, normally, if you have a USB printer, this isn't going to work. This works with any printer. It's compatible with more than 4,000 brands, including USB printers. You just open up the box. You plug in the USB printer. You connect it to the network, and it's done. It configures itself automatically, although there's a web interface. You can get more fancy if you wish. 1X Print Server will support, I think, up to 10 network printers and 8 USB printers simultaneously. So it's great for an office network. Make everything cloud print capable. And if you've got an old USB printer that is not on the network, this puts it on the network. This turns it into a Wi-Fi printer and a Google Cloud Print server. I just think it's fantastic. For home or for office, $149.95. But I got a special deal. When you go to xprintserver.com/twit, we're going to get you free shipping. And you're going to get it right away. We've talked to so many people who've used these XPrint servers and are so happy in schools, in business. It's just a boon. And let me just show you. It's tiny. Just a little box. You connect this to the USB printer, connect this to Ethernet, so it's on your LAN, and that's it. It's done. And no software to download, nothing to install, nothing to configure. It just works. Love it. XPrint server. It solves a problem. If you've been trying to use Google Cloud Print, they also have an AirPrint version. xprintserver.com/twit. Very affordable solution. I mean, we don't even mention the fact that it makes it any printer a Wi-Fi printer, but that's it does, and that's awesome. From your cloud, I can print to my house to my XPrint server at home. I mean, from my office to home or vice versa. xprintserver.com/twit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number, 8888. Ask Leo, taking your calls, talking high tech. Karen is next from Charlottesville, California. Is it California? Hi, Karen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Virginia.
Hello.
Charlottesville, Virginia. I see the V now.
Yeah, the home of Thomas Jefferson and UVA.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm the one who did the MacBook Air, the 2010, mm-hmm. and put the Windows on it. You know, I called you a while back, and I did do it. I accomplished the task of putting the Windows and taking the Maverick completely off.
You are a geek, Karen.
Oh, no, not really. I got everything, all the drivers done except two of them. I didn't get the the iSight, and I didn't get the Bluetooth, but I wouldn't use either one of them, so it wasn't a biggie. But
in general, just remember, the drivers for Macintosh computers and Windows come from Apple. So Apple offers those for download. That's what Boot Camp.
I know
one
it.
Of,
I,
one
I,
of the things Boot Camp does. Yeah.
Yes, sir. That's what I did. I used the Boot Camp.
I'm surprised it didn't work.
What I did is I had the other one on there first.
Yeah.
You know, the
you have to start with Mac OS. You run Boot Camp, partitions the drive, makes Windows. And downloads, as part of that, downloads the latest drivers from Apple because it's Apple hardware, so they have the drivers.
That's right. That's
you install
right.
the drivers on your Windows. And then how did you remove Macintosh? You just deleted that partition?
Just deleted it. Yeah.
You're a brave lady.
Well, I didn't care because I had the, where I could
reverse. You could always go back.
It.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Yeah, I could revert. But the thing is that, the only reason why I did that because I did not have a lot of storage space. It
was
only a 64 gig, solid-state hard drive.
It is a Mac Pro, a MacBook Pro or a MacBook Air is equivalent of similarly priced high-end Windows machine. They're very, very similar. So this is a completely legitimate use of a Mac as far as I'm concerned. You bought your PC hardware from Apple instead of from Asus or Dell or Acer.
That's right. And do you know it runs a whole lot better than a Windows one?
It may well.
It's got Windows Vista because, that's the only disk that I could find right off hand that I had the product key and everything.
Walt Mossberg once wrote in a review of the MacBook, it's the best Windows machine he ever used. it's a good Windows machine.
Great. See,
let me ask you this. Turn on the machine, does it just go straight to Windows or do you need to tell it to or something like that?
Okay. See, they use a different, BIOS. Or
yes.
Something.
It's
like
a UEFI. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. You know more about it than I do. But see, it'll go right to that. you know, like a, it's like a, that little, you know, it's a little screen, like where it's kind of gray, but I know
got
it's
it.
Apple.
And then you choose, and then you choose the.
And then you choose, yeah. Right, because I just, like I said, deleted, so it has the other old stuff on there.
There is. You can download a from Apple, a Windows version of the Apple tools, including the startup disk manager, and you can tell it just boot straight to Windows, and you can do that without any Macintosh involvement.
But it doesn't you know.
I understand. It's for Windows. You download it. Yeah, it runs in Windows. It's not a Mac program. It's a Windows program. Apple offers. Okay. Yeah, you don't worry about it. You're happy. I don't want to mess with it.
No. I tell you what. Put that information in the show notes.
I will.
You know,
I will.
I can look at it later because
yeah,
that's kind of cool what you're saying.
Yeah, you can download. So Apple offers a number of utilities just for Windows. Of course, iTunes and QuickTime, but also ability to access iCloud. And then they also have a startup disk manager. And you could say, look, just don't even think about Macintosh. Just boot right into Windows. And you won't ever see – you'll see the Apple gray screen. That's a memory test. But you'll never see the chooser. You'll just go right into Windows from then on.
Well, I don't see no chooser.
Oh, it does go into Windows.
Well, maybe I do. Maybe I do hit that little screen.
Yeah.
Because see, I also put something else on there. I put Linux on there.
Well, you know. Oh, you are okay. You qualify 100%, Karen. So you have a dual boot Mac Pro that dual boots Windows and Linux.
MacBook Air.
Rock on.
It don't take up a whole lot, you know.
No, Linux is small.
Yeah. Right on one. Yeah. Now, I didn't call you. I called you to tell you about that, you know. But I love your network. And see, I'm not really that geeky.
Yes, you are.
Well, you might think I am. But,
you qualify. Know. Anyway, what can I do to help? Thank you for the kind words. What can I do to help you?
Well, when I called and I talked to Heather, your phone screener, who's really sweet.
She is. That, yeah.
And I wish Scott Wilkerson a happy birthday too, because I've seen him at NAB in Las Vegas.
Have we met before? Yeah. Did I meet you at NAB?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Good. I saw you. Yeah, man.
All right. Now, I remember you now.
I wouldn't get up to the Petaluma so bad, but my sister is helping me, you know, like financially because I don't have the money. I got to wait for her.
You're smart, though. You're doing it all. You know, the Linux is free. You're just doing great. You didn't have an – that's awesome. Well, but seriously, okay, before we run out of time, what can I do to help you?
Yeah. Okay, my question. Yes. Well, you know, now, I didn't know the right terminology, but I think she said it's like a – like, you know, say if you want to, the cellular.
Yeah.
Self service. Well,
yeah.
if you want to have where you can estimate like your usage, like say if I wanted to get rid of Comcast because I use Comcast.
I see. You want to know how much data do I need if I wanted to use a MiFi or some sort of cell-based internet connection?
Yeah, that I could use with my phone and use with everything, and I carried it around. That's right, like a MiFi. But what I want to do is where you plug in, like, you know, your data, you, like, say,
Can go to your Comcast page and see how much data you've used. They instituted this when they were doing data caps. For a while, Comcast played with the idea of limiting you to 250 gigabytes a month. They've dropped that, thank goodness. But log into your Comcast account, and I believe it tells you how much data you use every month.
Okay, well, how do you figure that and transfer it over to cellular?
It's the same.
You know it's the same.
It would be exactly the same.
Okay. And you
but just remember, you may do things with your home internet connection that you might not want to do on cellular, things like watch Netflix.
Well, see, I don't see that. Well, see, I don't watch anything.
So then you're all right. Listening, you know, if you listen to my stuff nonstop, most streams are no more than 128 kilobits per second. So I think, what is that? That's if you'd multiply that times 8 to get to a megabit, then I don't know. I'll have to do my math. But I think you're probably all right. Live streaming is what eats up bandwidth, though.
What I do is I listen to things like, you know, I take WTDU, which is our local radio station, and WNRN, those two, and I'll listen to those, and I'll listen to your network, and then I'll listen to Dave Ramsey, and then I'll listen to these podcasts.
You don't have antenna reception in Charlottesville? You like to listen on the internet.
Oh, I have different reasons why I do that.
That's fine. But that does use bandwidth. Let me do a little calculation. I'm going to just go to Google and say how many megabytes is, you know, most of these are 64 megabits per second because talk radio is you know, it's mono. There's no left-right channel. So that means 64 kilobits per second.
See, I do audio 24/7 and 7 days a week as far as on the internet pretty much. But it's mainly audio.
Now, it could add up. Consider it says it's 230 megabytes an hour. That's an awful lot. So that means if 4 hours is going to go through a gigabyte. Yeah, you would probably be going through, if you're listening streaming, and you'll see this on your Comcast account, you're going through quite a few gigabytes a month. That may not be economical. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I was doing some calculations. Instead of paying attention, I was doing some calculations. I love Google for this stuff. So our last caller wanted to know how much bandwidth it would use up to listen to live radio over the internet. She listens to a lot of podcasts and stuff. And, you know, if she listened every day for a length of time, how much bandwidth that would use. Now, of course, the best way to estimate any of this stuff is to look at your actual usage. But I'll give you an example. Our stream, if you listen to our audio stream for this show, at least from my network, and it depends, but it's 60, because it's just a male voice, you don't need a high bit rate. Most, you know, CD quality MP3s are 64 kilobits per second per channel. So stereo recording would be 128 kilobits a second, but we're mono. So 64 kbps. And I just did a Google query. How much is 64 kbps in megabytes an hour? 23.8 megabytes an hour. So assuming, and it's just calculations, assuming that you listen 8 hours a day all month, you'd be using around 3.5 gigabytes of data a month. You get a 5 gigabyte plan, which I would say is the minimum to get for if it's going to be your home internet. You're probably all right. You might want to look at 8 gigabytes. Most of the carriers offer 8 gigabytes as well. In most cases, it's been my experience, in most cases, carriers, when you get your data from cell phone signals, and you could do this for your home. A lot of people do. But whether you get it for a home or your phone or both, they don't charge an exorbitant amount for overages. It's usually $10 a gigabyte. So roughly the same amount that they charge for the first 5 gigabytes. And then if you use, well, I use 6 or 7, it's just another $10 per gigabyte. It's not hundreds of dollars. It's not going to kill you. But you do want to get it as close to accurate as you can. So do the math. And Google's very helpful in this. As long as you know how rich that stream is. If it's a stereo high-quality radio stream, 128 kilobytes, or I'm sorry, kilobits per second. And you got to state the bits and bytes correctly. We normally talk of streams in bits per second, but we talk about data in bytes or kilobytes or megabytes or gigabytes. So you got to make that translation as well. But that works out pretty well. Dennis in Thousand Oaks, Leo Laporte, we got him back. Are you there now, Dennis?
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
You're right. I was listening to the radio like a dummy.
You jumped, and then it was too late. I'm sorry. I just didn't.
I know. Yeah. Anyway, the problem is I have an older PC that is running XP, has a Pentium processor, and I have two drives. I have the C drive, of course, which has my programs on it, and I have an auxiliary D drive that I keep all my data on, you know, my files, my income tax, all that kind of stuff. And what's happened yesterday, I have a program called Malwarebytes.
Yeah.
And it was installed, when I last did the computer, about 6 years ago, I had it cleaned out of viruses and all, and they installed it. And he said to run it about every, you know, 3 or 4 weeks at the most, maybe preferably once a week. And I did that faithfully for the longest time. Well, when I ran it before, every time I'd bring it up, it would say, it's been so many days since you used this, and you need to update it. So you click OK, and it would automatically update, and then it would run this profile. And it'd come back and say, you have zero threats. I've never had it say I had a threat. Well, yesterday morning, I hadn't run it in 139 days, my first mistake. And
Your first mistake was relying on Malwarebytes, but go on. I'll explain that later. Go ahead.
All right. Anyway, it updated itself, and then it went ahead as usual, and it ran the profile, came back and said I had 9 suspicious files. So I listed them. And I was in a hurry. I had a luncheon date with a friend, et cetera. So I should have just canceled it out and forgot about it for the time being. But it took an hour and a half to get that far, so I didn't want to waste that time. If they gave me an option, you can delete it or you can quarantine it, other than just, you know, Xing the program and getting out of it. And I chose to quarantine. And then when I got home that evening, I tried to get into my file D, the auxiliary drive, and it said, one portal said it needs to be rebooted. And it can't access. Do you want to reboot now? Another portal said corrupt data or something to that effect. I went to the malware and brought up the history and saw that they were still quarantined, so I opted to unquarantine them, and the damn thing deleted them on me. So then I went to restore for the, you know, for the
computer. I'm going to stop you because this is just going to go on forever, and it's
okay. Sure.
And the bottom line is, don't use Malwarebytes as an antivirus. That's not what it's for. Whoever told you to do that was wrong.
Okay.
It's not an antivirus.
Okay.
Quarantining, when you find a threat, quarantining it puts it in a special place where it presumably can't be activated. Antiviruses do this as well. Eventually delete it. Once it's quarantined, it means there's something in it and it can't be used again.
Okay.
So what was it? Was it documents that you wanted? Was it something you wanted?
Well, I want to access that drive D, but now when I hit the restore, it comes back and said, we can't restore drive D beyond, you know, 2 days ago, because either it was somehow deleted from the restore process, or you didn't have a connection.
Yeah, malware will very often remove. First of all, I don't rely on Malwarebytes. I don't rely on System Restore. That's a very iffy prospect.
Okay.
Malware will almost always delete System Set Restore set points.
Okay,
so that's probably why you have no previous set points.
Okay,
System Restore is not reliable. Period.
Okay.
And you don't, the real issue here is, what are you doing to keep from getting malware? Malwarebytes is not going to keep you from getting malware. All it is going to discover it.
Okay, I do have an antivirus, but I can't tell you what it is. It was loaded some time ago, and of course, XP is no longer supported. So.
Oh my God, you've got a mess.
I got a mess. Anyway, the point
is, why no one should ever buy Windows. I don't know why. We've been sold a bill of goods. Why should you have to know any of this stuff?
Well, I was thinking I need a new computer. I've known that for a while. And I didn't back up that D drive for the last few months. Usually I back it up to a flash drive, but I got lazy and I procrastinated.
This is such a great ad for all of our sponsors.
Yeah, I didn't do it. And so anyway, right now I prayed and it didn't seem to work. But somebody told me to come see you, and that was my subconscious. Is there any way that I can access drive D? I think D still has everything on it. I just can't access it.
Yeah, I'm not sure why you can't access it. It may be completely independent of all of this. The drive has failed.
No, I don't think it has. I can hear it running and everything. And well, that doesn't mean anything.
No, does it, that doesn't mean anything. It's like having, I have a car. It has no tires, but I hear the engine going. So here's the deal.
Okay.
What I would suggest, the D drive has all your critical stuff. It hasn't been backed up lately. So we want to really make sure that that D drive is safe. You probably should take it out of the computer.
Okay.
And because it's a desktop or is it a laptop?
It's a desktop.
It's desktop. That's what I figured. And it's a separate drive, not a partition?
No, it's a separate drive, a 1 terabyte drive.
Chances are it's fine. But you're you could take it out of that computer. You can either bring it to somebody and say, can I get all the data on this? And they'll have the proper recovery tools. Or you could yourself get a USB enclosure for it or some interface for it so you could read it yourself. Chances are it is fine. You are going to want to rebuild this system from scratch at this point. It sounds like it's pretty messed up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm not doing this to irritate you Windows lovers. And if you love Windows, that's fine. I mean, if you are a gamer, you love Windows, that's fine. If you say, I'm a Windows fan, I'm an aficionado of Microsoft Windows, by all means, knock yourself out, buy PCs, use PCs. In business, we use Dell computers running Windows 8 in our office, our front office, and Windows 7. Of course, because for business, you know, because of the applications, that makes a lot of sense. Plus, we have professional IT support that will help us with things like eliminating virus, protecting against virus. In fact, in this brick house building, viruses can't even get in because we have big iron gateways, Astaro gateways, filtering everything that comes in and out. And so we really do our best to protect the users here. But if you're at home, the what was for so many years the conventional wisdom, need a computer, buy a Windows PC, is just wrong. It is just wrong. And I want you to kind of rethink what your beliefs are in this respect. It ain't true anymore that that's the right thing to do. And again, I exempt any of you who are gamers or, you know, you're writing Windows software. You know who you are. That's fine. If you need to use Windows by all means. If you're running CAD programs, if you're in business. But a home user who's doing email and surfing should never buy a Windows computer. Ever, 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 ever. And the reason you just heard. It's full of traps. It's a trap. There you go. That's the slogan. Windows. Microsoft Windows. It's a trap. If you're just doing surfing and email, there's so many better choices. And I don't mean Mac. I think a Macintosh is less of a trap, but still overly complex for most people. Desktop computing is pretty much dead now because we have such capable mobile devices, phones, and tablets that can do all of the above. And if you need a real keyboard, I would look at a Chromebook, much less expensive. It's just a browser. You can't get into trouble with it. You can't get viruses. You can't get malware. You don't have to become a security guru to lock yourself down. And you don't have to have this fear of what am I doing? Is this dangerous at all times? And Windows, you do. There's no reason anybody in the home who doesn't have... If you don't know you need Windows, you don't need Windows. How about that? If you don't know you need Windows, you don't need Windows. It's a trap. There's so many better choices out there. All right, so I'm going to go next to Marie in Irvine. She's trying to find her router password. Wherever could it be? I feel like the computer industry has dealt us a very bad hand here. And I get the brunt of it, don't I? we told everybody these would be easy. Anybody could use a computer. No problem at all. Marie in Irvine. Hi, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. You're having too much fun.
I love my job.
I know. I thought it was supposed to be work.
Oh, no. Don't tell them that.
Oh, okay.
They'll have to start paying me.
Okay.
So you lost your router password.
No, I got a new printer. I had to replace my workforce because it just kept jamming, and they said they're all plastic, so they can't repair them. So I have a new one, and I want it set up wirelessly.
Yeah.
But I don't remember my
Wi-Fi. You don't remember your Wi-Fi password.
No.
Yeah, next time write it down. I don't know of any way to recover a Wi-Fi password. And you never had to re-enter it because once you entered it once, all your machines remembered it. The old printer remembered it, but now you don't remember it. So you got to start over.
What can I say?
You can start over. It's not so hard. You're going to have to reset your Wi-Fi router. And it will. And did you set it up initially or did you have somebody come in and do it?
No, I had someone come in and do it.
Yeah. Did they not give you a piece of paper with all the information, including the password?
Oh, well, there's a good possibility, but I haven't a clue where or when.
Yeah, I know how you feel.
Yeah. So
you can actually, by the way, next time, that password isn't so important that you keep it a secret that you can't write it on a piece of paper or tape and tape it to the router. Next time I would do that.
Okay.
Because that's what I do. I take that piece of paper they gave me, and I cut out all the stuff that they gave me, and I actually tape it to the bottom of the router. Because the only people you have to worry about are people on the street, not people in your house. Right?
It's four in my house. It's too late anyway.
It's too late anyway. They got everything. They got the jewelry. Okay. So, just put it on the bottom of the router next time. Now, The way you're going to have to do this is you're going to have to reset the router. All routers, all of these boxes have hidden a little button. You might need a paperclip to push it. Generally, what happens is you power it down. I just unplug the thing. It's okay to do that. Then press the button and plug it back in and hold it for 10 seconds. It'll blink. Sometimes they have a light that will blink to let you know that it's been reset. But after about 10 to 15 seconds of that, powering it up with that button depressed, it's back to the way it was from the factory.
Okay.
Now, you're going to have to do what that tech guy did. So you might want to find the tech guy and bring him back. Because you're going to have to go in there, set up a new password, configure the router, all of that stuff.
Ay-yi-yi.
Because it doesn't have any of that stuff. It's back to the way it was when it came out of the box.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. I just want to play with that. I just like to use it. I don't like to do all this other stuff. Okay.
I don't blame you.
Okay.
I don't blame you. There may, you know, people are saying, well, you know, if you have a Mac, maybe it's stored, the password's stored in the keychain. I don't know if it's stored unencrypted in the keychain, but it might be. Do you have a Mac?
Yes, I do.
Oh, all right. So here's, okay, this actually is a good tip then. You could go, there's a program on your Macintosh. It's hidden away in the utility folder called Keychain Access. And that actually has all of your passwords in it, including the password for your Wi-Fi access point.
Oh, okay. Ooh.
Oh. So open Keychain Access. It's in the utilities folder on your application folder.
So I can go into Finder?
You can go look at it in the Finder. I have my Keychain Access, and I'm trying to think what it would look like for the router password. You're going to see passwords, and you might have to search through the passwords to figure out what it's a password, where it's stored. Maybe it'll say internet password or something like that.
Okay.
What does it say? Do you know? No. I'm not asking you. I'm asking the chat room. but of course you don't know.
You're asking someone who might know.
You don't know. Okay. But I'm assuming that the geek who set up your Wi-Fi access point set you up with a password to protect you.
Okay.
If he didn't, then you don't have one. He shouldn't be able to log on. But you're saying that I'm just trying to figure out. You might also, somebody's saying it's on the router. I don't know if it's on the router, but you might want to look at the router and see if anybody's.
Well, there's three separate numbers that's on the router.
Yeah, that won't help.
Numbers, and I tried all three of those.
Yeah, none of those are the password. I'm not sure what the geek who set it up did, but if he turned on encryption, which he should have, it should be stored in your keychain. I'm going to see if I can find the name after the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, hour number 3 of the Tech Guy program. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number if you want to talk tech. We would love to do it with you. It's kind of like a user group of the airwaves. We all get together and solve each other's problems. And I think we've solved Marie's problem. Marie, if you remember, the last caller of the last hour wanted to install a new printer, a Wi-Fi printer. That's nice, but she doesn't remember her Wi-Fi password. She can't log into her Wi-Fi access point. She doesn't need to remember it because once you use it once on any computer or printer or whatever, it will just remember it and you don't have to ever enter it again. And naturally, since she hasn't entered it in months or years, she forgot it. Nor did she write it down, or she doesn't have the piece of paper. The technician left. Whoever set it up didn't bother to put it anywhere. So we figured it out. Because she's running a Mac, she's in luck. I think Windows probably does this, too. There are programs that will let you do this. UrfanView makes one that will allow you to find your Wi-Fi passwords. They're probably stored in the registry. The good news is, on neither Windows nor the Mac, are they stored encrypted or hidden? If you can log into your computer, you can get to them. On the Macintosh, as I told Marie, you need to open a program called Keychain Access and then search for the word airport. And you'll be amazed. You'll see a list of airport network passwords. These are the Wi-Fi passwords you've used on that computer. And you'll go scroll down that list and you'll see this SSID for the one you're using. If you don't know what the name of the router you're using is, you'll find it in the underneath the Wi-Fi icon on your menu bar. If you drop that down, you'll see which Wi-Fi you're on. There'll be a checkbox next to it. And so see which Wi-Fi you're on because your computer's still using it. It remembered the password. Go to that particular entry in your keychain. open it up, and you'll see a checkbox that says show password. You'll have to enter in your password for the system. That's to protect, you know, you from others seeing it. But once you enter in your password, it'll show you in plain text the password. You now know it. My suggestion, I guess you could remember this particular sequence, but my suggestion is you then write it on a piece of masking tape and put it underneath your router. That way you'll know it forever. We'll put a link to the Earphone View program for Windows. It does it all automatically. And this step-by-step for people who have forgotten their Wi-Fi access points. And in future, my suggestion would be keep, you know, when you get that piece of paper from the internet service provider's technician or whoever set, you know, the tech guy who set it up for you, put it somewhere safe. Best place to put it. In fact, my Comcast guy did this for me. He folded it up, put it underneath the router. Might be a good idea to tape it underneath the router so it doesn't get lost. But that's keep that around because chances are you're not going to remember it and you will need it sometime. Yay, Marie. I hope we found this solution to the problem. Bruce is next. He's in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, Leo. Pleasure to speak to you. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Okay, I am a long-time listener. I listened way back in the screensaver days.
Thank you, thank you.
And I'm also a fellow ham, Kilo Charlie 3 Juliet Sierra.
Oh, well, I'm Whiskey 6, what is T? I've forgotten. That's how long it's been. Turkey, Whiskey, Turkey. That's not turkey. Anyway, good to talk to you. What can I do for you, Bruce?
Yeah, you too. Okay, so I have a little bit of a predicament here. My daughter has an iPod. It's one of the older classic iPods with the 80 gigabyte Toshiba hard drives in it. The iPad just totally died on it. So I ended up opening up the iPod, pulling out the drive.
Wow.
I bought one of those little tiny mini drive caddies. And
wow.
Surprised.
This is ambitious. Wow.
A 1.8-inch drive caddy.
Yeah, these were those little IBM mini drives that in the early iPods.
Exactly, yeah. And it uses one of these little zero insertion force type cables. So I got the whole thing so that I could plug it into my USB port, and I had been doing a bunch of Googling to just try to figure out how I can somehow get her iTunes music off of this thing.
Yeah, can you see the drive once you mount it via USB?
That's the problem. When I'm in the device manager, I actually can see it in there. It shows the Toshiba drive, but when I try to click on volumes, it says no volume found. If I go to disk,
you know, I'm going to tell you the really bad news. If you just left this in the iPod, it would have been a lot easier.
Well, that would not do anything. It was like totally
non-responsive. Oh, all right, it was smushed.
Yeah,
might have been the drive itself was non-responsive. I mean, might be that's fried. No, I don't know what they format that drive on, but if it's a Windows iPod, I believe they use FAT32. If it's a Macintosh iPod, they use the Macintosh HFS file system. You're using it on the same kind of computer the iTunes was on, right?
Yeah, it's on a PC with Windows 7
And it was a Windows iPod, and she was using it on Windows as well.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So it would be FAT32. You should be able to see it. If you can't see it, make sure that you're showing all hidden files on the drive. So you might have to right-click the drive, select properties, and check the box that says show hidden files.
Okay.
But you should be able to see it. It's a standard Windows format. What you'll note, though, is that there aren't names on those folders. They're numeric. They obfuscate it as best they can.
Okay. Do you know why, then, when I go in the disk manager, even though it shows up on the chain under drives in device manager, when I go to disk manager, it doesn't appear at all? And it's also not in my computer.
So what you're seeing, when you see it, you're seeing the USB interface for the drive. You're not seeing the drive itself.
Well, although it does actually give the name of the Toshiba model number of the drive, it does show that under disk drives.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you can read the drive. That merely means the drive's reporting its name.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That concerns me. If the disk manager doesn't see anything like a partitioned drive,
right?
It sounds like that drive died along with the rest of the iPod.
Okay, that's what I was afraid of.
It doesn't show it even as unmounted. It just doesn't show it at all.
No, No, I thought, you know, there should be something there, even if unmounted or whatever, but there was nothing, nothing at all.
And you've connected it to a USB interface.
Correct.
Yeah. Boy, I don't, you know, it's, I hate to say it's dead because I don't want you to give up. And I'm trying to think if there's anything we can do, and I'm checking with the chat room to see if there's anything we can do. But if, you know, the USB interface queries the drive and says, what's your make and model, and delivers that along with the fact that there is a drive present. That does not mean that there's actual media you can read. It just means, yeah, I've got some hardware on the other end. So that by itself isn't indicative. Usually, if drive manager should be able to see even an unmounted drive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. I agree.
Let me ask the chat room, because the chat room keeps saying it's not mounted. Well, what would he do to mount it then? Maybe the driver. It's just a USB mass storage device. I don't think you'd need a special driver.
Yeah, no. And I did try to see if there was an updated driver, and it looked on the internet, and it said the driver you're using is the most current.
It's a mass storage driver. It's a USB mass storage driver. It's a standard thing. I think you probably have a dead drive. This happens with any kind of drive. If you can't see it, you can't mount it. You can't see the data, then it's just not working. Yeah.
Right. Usually what I find with hard drives is either they don't spin up, or I kind of hear like what I would call the click of death. You know, you hear the hard drive, you know, the heads are trying.
It's really, if you think about it, totally amazing that for many years iPods had spinning, I guess they still do on the big ones, spinning drives in them, like miniature hard drives.
This is
crazy.
A really interesting little, very flat and small,
Check and see if, it sounds like the drive's not showing up at all. You don't even see it in the drive manager at all.
No.
So there's nothing to initialize or mount. Yeah, I think it's dead. That's all I can think of. But if we have better choices, we'll put them on the show notes at techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy, episode 1111 or... Episode 15. I'm not sure. Are we in binary or decimal here? I don't know. Episode 1111. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. After conferring with my experts in the chat room, smart fellows and gals and ladies all, I think we've pretty much decided that drive is dead. That's a dead drive. It's dead, dead, dead. By the way, if you can get the iPod to work, that's always the best way to try to get the stuff off the iPod, because it is a USB interface and does some interpretation. And there are some great programs out there from companies like Ecamm and others that will trick the iPod into interpreting the numeric folder names. There's actually an XML file with the text names matching it up, and then you'll get the files fully named properly. Properly designated and all of that stuff. So it's always best to use the iPod to read an iPod drive if you can. It's also a good idea to back up your music. Apple says this. When you download the music, Apple says, look, this is just like a CD you bought. If you lose it, it's gone. Now, that's not strictly true. And so this is the final fix is to go to Apple. And throw yourself on the mercy of the court, or the geniuses in this case, and say, you know, this is what happened. Is there any way we can re-download this music? If you paid the $25 a month for iTunes Match, you can. You don't even have to ask them. That's one of the neat things about iTunes Match. It matches up your entire iTunes library. Take some time to do that, because there may be stuff in there you didn't buy from Apple. I expect there is. Matches it all up, makes a list. You can delete your entire library, lose a hard drive, whatever, and then re-download it all from Apple, which is awesome. In fact, it will replace low-quality, copy-protected music with high-quality, unprotected music. It's a very nice feature, $25 a year. So I do recommend that, but if you don't do that, then you must make a backup of your music, just like anything else, because if you lose it, And if you think about it, trusting it to an iPod is the worst. That thing is banged around, thrown around, lost easily, stolen. It's not the kind of thing you want to say, hey, all my entire music collection's on this little box and that's it. Mm-mm. At least keep a copy on the computer, or make a backup copy, something like that. If it's music you purchase on Apple, no problem. You can re-download it. If it was more than that, then hope you had iTunes Match. I'm actually now trying high-res music or high-def music. There's kind of a little movement going on to say, well, you know, the music that's recorded on CDs, which we for a long time have thought, hey, this is better than your ear can hear. 16-bit sound recorded 44,100 times per second, or 44,116. May not be the end-all and be-all. It's certainly not how the music is originally recorded in the studio. Most studios now are digital recording, but they're usually recording at a higher resolution than 16-bit, usually 24-bit. They may even be sampling at a higher rate. There may be music that is available in 96,000 samples per second at 24-bits or higher. There's even higher. You can go to places like HDTracks.com and buy these. It's effectively buying a digital master. And Neil Young, who has for a long time been kind of on his horse talking about the fact that people today aren't hearing the real music as we as musicians hear it when you're listening. You're not even listening to CD quality most of the time now. We're listening to a highly compressed version of the CD quality, a 128 kilobit MP3, for instance. So much of the music is taken out of there. He says it's just not good. And then you're listening on cheap earbuds. So he's on a campaign to increase, raise awareness and then increase the quality of the music we buy. He has created a player called the Pono, P-O-N-O. It was a Kickstarter project. They raised a massive amount of money on Kickstarter. And it should be coming out this fall. I bought one. I hope I'm getting it this fall. I'd love to review it. And it can play back these higher resolution files. And then they'll have a store online where you can buy them. So understand there's kind of three different ways of storing music or audio that we're talking about here. There's the original analog form, whether it's on tape or a vinyl record, that's never been compressed, never been sampled. It's just an analog recording of the actual sound. That's rare. Nowadays, most studios are recording digitally, and they're recording at a high bit rate, a very high resolution digital recording, which is then mixed down to a lower resolution for pressing on a CD or distributing via iTunes. But that stuff's even more compressed. That's compressed using a lossy compression algorithm like AAC in the case of iTunes, where the file sizes are much smaller, but I think it's pretty clear you are losing some quality. So anyway, I'm experimenting with buying these HD tracks. It's expensive. Well, it's not expensive. It's like buying a CD or maybe a little bit more. I just bought a Joni Mitchell CD for $25. And I'm actually very curious because her older stuff was recorded almost certainly in an analog 8-track machines on tape. At some point was digitized. I hope was digitized at a high bit rate with a high quality master. But there's been some concern that some of the stuff you're downloading from these high def music stores is just upsampled. It's like a CD and they just add more. But that adds no quality at all. And I don't know if there's any way to tell that, frankly. I'm very curious. I've just downloaded a few albums. I'll be listening. But the problem is then you can't listen to them on a standard player, even your computer in most cases. iTunes, for instance, will not play back these high-quality, uncompressed, high-resolution files. You have to get a special player. There's a free one in the Mac store called Vox that plays back the high resolution. And then when my Pono player comes, I can hook it up to my stereo and see how it sounds. Probably to my ancient ears, it won't sound different at all. Let's go to our next call. Bob is on the line from Apple Valley in Minnesota. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Leah, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you? Is it Montana?
No, it's Minnesota.
Minnesota, okay.
Yep.
MN.
Yeah, MN. Yep. I've been listening to since Call for Help and Kate Botello and the whole gang. In fact, I got the picture sitting on the step. And
That's great. Did we autograph it?
Yes, you did.
Right on.
Yes.
That's great. Well, it's nice to talk to you again.
And the T-shirt. Say, and it's because of you.
Wait a minute. But do you have the refrigerator magnet?
No.
So you don't have you don't have the complete set. I don't even have a refrigerator magnet.
Well, I'll look for it. No. say, I started a company because of you, where, and I help people with their computer questions, but I aim at seniors.
Excellent.
And I go to their homes and help them set up their equipment and all that
That's
good
great.
Stuff.
That's great. That's great.
It's just been a ton of fun.
Oh, I bet.
And the last couple of months, I've been getting some questions that a number of these people have been getting these Microsoft phone scam
calls. Look, we got to take a break. Hang on. I want to talk about that. Very big. Big, big problem. And hold on, Bob. We'll talk about it in a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Bob is a great guy. He helps seniors use technology. But lately, he's noticed a rise in a scam that we've heard about before. It's very common. Bob, tell us about it.
Well, it seems like a lot of the seniors that I've been talking to, well, maybe not a lot, but it's increasing numbers, is they're getting these phone calls from someone who says that they're from Microsoft, and we notice that you've got errors or viruses or whatever, and we want to, of course, help you out.
Yes.
And so I have talked with these people before. I do a couple programs in the area, and with the groups that I talk to, I tell them, it's a scam, hang up on them, so on and so forth.
Good.
But it's something about when someone calls you on the phone or something happens on the internet, I tell them it's a little bit like me walking up to you on the street and say, you know, you look a little bit peaked. Take these pills that I pull out of my
sure. pocket. What could go wrong? What could possibly go wrong? Yeah.
Go wrong. But for some reason, when someone calls them on the phone or it's off the internet or something, they say, maybe it's just me.
Can I ask you a question? Are you finding more of your seniors are taking to tablets instead of Windows?
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's so much of a better choice. And then they're, by the way, not prey to this kind of scam.
And I had one person who said, she said, I got rid of my XP computer. I got a Windows 7 computer because she didn't want 8. She had it set up for 1 hour and got a call.
Yeah.
And the question...
Well, the call's unrelated, by the way. People who have Macs and tablets will still get this call.
Oh, yeah.
They're just calling randomly. But the good news is you can go, well, I don't know what you're talking about because I'm not running Windows, you nitwit.
And that's the question that it comes down to, because I always get the question, why did they call me? How did they get my number?
And random.
Is it an absolute shotgun just their lucky day?
So we're not sure where this is coming from, but I believe that it's actually coming from the same call centers that will give you tech support during the day. When things get slow at these call centers, there, I believe, the same technicians are tasked with making these cold calls.
Okay.
They may be going from a list, but more likely they're going randomly. They may have a list of numbers that they have purchased for other reasons. It has nothing to do with anything they can see on the internet, because it goes to people who don't have computers at all. But they don't care, because they just hang up and they move on.
So it's just their unlucky day.
Yeah, but it's happening so much because it's a very effective scam. By the way, let me explain how the scam works. I know you know, Bob. But the reason the scam works, person says, well, I'm calling from Microsoft. We've noticed unusual activity coming from your computer. We believe you're infected. Follow these instructions. And they'll have them run the Microsoft Event Viewer. Most people don't even know such a thing exists. The Event Viewer shows a log of events that have happened on the PC. And what people don't realize is there are frequently failed events. You get lots of red exclamation marks on any Event Viewer. That's normal. That's normal. But what the and the bad guy knows this. He says, all right, you've run the Event Viewer. Are you seeing any red exclamation marks? Oh, my, yes, I am. Oh, my goodness. How many are you? Oh, there's quite a few. Oh, dear. Can you read me some of the text? Yes, it says failed to load object 6379. Oh, my. Well, we believe now that we understand why we're getting these pings from you. You are infected, but good news, I can remove it. Now, here's where the scam happens. They could do one of two things. Almost always, they'll ask for access to your computer.
Right.
The really greedy ones will say, for $300, I'll fix it. They get a credit card and access to your computer. Now they're going to town. Because first of all,
that comes after they access the computer and they ask for it.
Yeah, because now they have a credit card number, they have cash in the hand, and they've access to your computer, which means they're very, very likely put malware on your system that can log things, find out more, and so forth.
The other one that we've seen is that they'll ask them to run the task manager, do a control, alt, delete, look at services, and you see all those things that are not running.
Right.
See all the things that are stopped.
Disabled? Oh, that's not good.
All the things that are stopped, yeah. Those should be running.
Those should be running. I can help you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I can help you. Now, you know why people fall for this? Well, first of all, it's from Microsoft, right?
No, absolutely,
it's not.
Yeah.
So what we tell everybody is Microsoft will not call you at home, ever.
Yep.
Number one, any more than the IRS or anybody else will. Number two, people do have this kind of superstitious fear of their computer. Most people feel overwhelmed by the technology. They don't understand it. They know they don't understand it. And they're easily victimized because of it.
And so they hear so much about viruses.
Yeah, they hear about this all the time.
Yep.
So that's why I'm more and more increasingly telling people, unless you know you need Windows, don't buy Windows. And you know what? You probably don't need Windows.
That's
people
right.
have been buying Windows PCs for years because that's what everybody bought.
And the seniors are coming from an environment where I used to work in a company and they had Windows computers, so that's what I got at home.
Right. It's like saying, well, I have to buy an IBM System 3600 because I had that at work. No, you don't.
That's right.
And I think most seniors really do well. My mom has had a series of computers, Windows 2000, Macs, but she now uses her tablet almost exclusively. She loves her iPad.
Yeah.
And it does everything she wants without any of the hassles.
Yeah. That's what I'm seeing in my classes more and more, is that more iPads coming in.
I hope so. I understand that there's some people who want to run programs that only run on Windows. That's it. Yeah. That's fewer and fewer, by the way.
Yeah. A lot of the Ancestry kind of programs run.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to do genealogy, you probably do need a PC, I'm sorry to say, or at least a Mac. You need a computer.
Yeah, that's right.
That's too bad. That's really too bad. I wonder, could you use a Chromebook and do Ancestry.com? I guess you could. No? Do you need to run the software?
A lot of them need to run the software itself. So I know there's a lot online, but a lot of them do the software.
Here's the good news. All of these companies are realizing that the future is in tablet computing.
Yeah.
And they will all have tablet apps.
Yeah. That's it.
Yep.
So that's what I'm looking for.
Hey, I thank you we've mentioned this before. I've played back some of these calls. If you go to YouTube, there are people who have made recordings of these scammers calling, so you can actually hear how a call goes.
I've got a couple of them.
Good.
I'm going to be playing them in my classes just so they hear what's going on.
Well, I'm so glad you do this. Those folks are so lucky to have you. Because I have to say, if you have to use Windows, well, at least find a support system, a user group, a class.
Right.
Somebody like Bob.
Right. Someone like me. That's right.
Yeah. Hey, thank you.
All because of you. Started after you.
Thank you for doing that. I really appreciate it, Bob.
Appreciate your help, too.
Such a gift to seniors, especially, because it keeps them, their minds active, keeps them young. And I say this as somebody who's in the AARP, so I know. Keeps them young, keeps their mind active, and most importantly, it keeps you attached to the world. You get involved in hobbies. My mom's big on the Ravelry knitting site. You make friends. It really is. The internet is an amazing thing, and there's no age limit. And the beauty of the internet is everybody is treated equally, sometimes equally badly, but everybody is treated equally. And it's an opportunity for anybody to go out and enjoy. So it's a great thing to turn somebody on to. And I think a lot of people, but especially people who didn't grow up with technologies like this, are intimidated by it. There's no reason to be. Mike and Tustin, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Leo. Great to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm a loyal listener, and I've called in quite a few times, and I really wanted to try and get hold of you last weekend and didn't get in, so I'm thrilled to.
Yay. I know it's hard, and I appreciate people who persist. We only have 6 lines, and as you now know, the reason we have so few lines, we don't want to keep you on hold for more than an hour or two.
Well, I noticed that one time I called and it did time out.
Yeah, hang on because we do have to take a break here, but I'll get right back to you. You're next when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, there he is. The Giz Whiz, Dick D. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. Hey, Dickie D.
How you doing, pal?
Joins us every week. I'm great to talk about
good.
Gadgets.
Yes.
Yes. And
as the man, the only man I know who spent, what was it, $80 to buy an ostrich pillow.
Oh, that thing, what a waste. That was a Kickstarter project that just didn't go very well.
Exactly. You stick your head in it so that you can sleep at an airport. Well, I have something else you might invest $25 in.
Okay.
To be a perfect matching companion.
Oh, great.
It's called Total Eclipse.
Yeah.
So it is a total darkness sleep mask. And it's all foam on the inside, but they've made little cutouts partway down so nothing is up against your eyes. Because some sleep masks are annoying. They press hard against your eyeballs.
I understand the need for complete darkness, but I find the sleep masks more annoying, frankly.
Yes. Yeah. Well, this helps alleviate that. But what's unique about the Total Eclipse is the front of it is a piece of whiteboard, and it comes with its own magic marker, so you can leave messages on the front of your sleep mask.
Why would you like? Don't bug
Leo,
me.
Leo, I tell you what. There was one time when I wish I had this.
Yeah.
On the flight, my companion, who I didn't know, was already asleep. I was dead tired. I did not want to miss the meal.
Ah.
And I thought, you know, I wonder if I write on a napkin, wake me for the meal, and pin it to my shirt. And
then
I
look
thought,
like an idiot. Yes.
So now you can leave messages on your sleep mask, like, don't wake me up. I didn't go to bed till 6 a.m.
Please wake me up for food service. That makes
sense. Wake me up for food service. Wake me up for anything.
I figure if you're wearing a sleep mask, that kind of says don't wake me up. I mean,
pretty much. But you can now list the reasons you want to be woken.
Yeah, wake me up when the show's over, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if you're a milquetoast, you could put on it a honey, I want a divorce, but don't wake me. You know, you could.
or she could write her goodbye note on your sleep mask. Leave the pen out just in case.
Oh, that's very funny. Yeah. That's very funny.
If you notice my clothes are gone, it's because I've left you. Wake up.
That's very funny.
How about this one? They also sell a Total Eclipse face mask that has a face on it.
A woken up face on it.
Your
so that
face.
You can sleep underneath it, and you look like you're sitting there being very attentive. This would be good for a very boring class.
This is bizarre. Yes. I'm going to get this one, and then I could wear it during the show, and no one will know.
Oh, that's a great idea.
This is the snoring that's the giveaway.
Yeah,
and
I think
the drooling.
So. I think so.
Chat room suggesting something like, wake me if the oxygen mask comes down.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah?
That's
yeah.
good. Someone else wrote, draw obscene things here.
Yes.
Dennis suggested that he just draw open eyes, but the company already has that covered.
That's probably how they came up with it. Hey, that would be, although open eyes drawn on might even be better.
Be funny, yeah.
I didn't get your number.
$25 at Amazon.
Leave your number before you go. What was your name again? That's always useful.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Oh, this is, don't bury me. I'm alive.
So where do I get this? Is this it's best?
Amazon $24.95. It's called Total Eclipse.
Total Eclipse.
And Leo, they do one other very clever thing. It comes with earplugs, and at the side of the Total Eclipse, there are earplug holders where you store the two earplugs.
Oh, that's a good one.
It is good because I was talking to Chad about this. We all carry earplugs. They're always at the bottom of your bag. They've gotten filthy at the bottom of your bag where they roll around in all the little crap at the bottom. This way you have two new earplugs, and they have their own little place on the side of your mask.
That's great. So this is you can find out more at bestsleepingmask.com, the Total Eclipse. And that's where they're selling the face mask that looks just like you. I'm going to get that. I like
that.
It'd
be funny. It's pretty funny.
You'll find Dick DiBartolo at gizwiz.biz. That's his website, gizwiz.biz. You can play the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine from this cat right here. And the Mad Magazine
just
you'll
about
getting,
a week left.
It will have my picture in it. Thanks. I very much appreciated that. That was nice of you.
No problem.
All right, take it easy. Hang on. The Giz Fizz coming up right after the show on the radio, not on the radio, on the podcast network. Let's get back to Mike. He's in Tustin. I'm sorry I had to put you on hold again, Mike, but thank you for your patience.
That's okay, Leo. I'm excited to talk to you.
What can I do for you?
Well, I'm calling today because I'm curious about something that I need now, and it's basically car video units, universal ones that are available now online, mostly from China. And they've got, like, GPS and NAS and Wi-Fi, and some of them are Windows CE and some are Android. And
yeah.
I'm building a little micro fleet of rental cars.
Oh, clever.
I'm up to five. And so even though one unit is only $200-$300, I'm going to need four or five or six of these, and I want to buy the right thing.
You know, and I am not an expert on these. And this is one thing you'll notice. You can go to eBay. There are lots of places where you can go and buy Chinese consumer electronics. Infinite in variety. It's amazing, the ingenuity. Because these chips are cheap and assembly in China is very, very cheap, the costs are low. But the quality can vary considerably. And the problem is when you buy something like this on eBay, you have no recourse after you buy it. You know, that buyer has moved on. So, I just don't have any experience at all in this category, Mike. I'm not surprised to hear it. In fact,
well, there's one brand in particular that seems to be prevalent, O-U-K-U.
No idea.
O-U-K-U.
Yeah. There are a million Chinese manufacturers. In fact, if Dick were still here, I'd bring him in, because when he goes to the Consumer Electronics Show, he doesn't go to the big floors and see the big companies. There is a whole floor, several football fields large, of Chinese companies like OUKU you've never heard of, making an amazing array of stuff. Now, some of this stuff will get picked up by companies like Belkin, who this is where Belkin gets a lot of its stuff, relabeled and sold in the U.S. for a higher price. Very often, you'll see from fairly big brand names kind of commodity-style Chinese goods with their brand on it. And it's the same product across many different brands. But I have no idea who OUKU is. I have no idea if that's good or bad. I guess, you know, buy one and see if you get good results.
Right. But that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, the standards are not high. And so a lot of these Chinese goods, because you're never going to get back to this guy, you're never going to be able to get a replacement. The quality stuff can be miswired, mislabeled. Ports can be dead. And what are you going to do?
Well, I have found all of them mostly on eBay, because I've been an eBay customer for 10 or 15 years. And, you know, oftentimes when you're looking for those kind of things, they're shipped out of Hong Kong.
Right.
And so that is unsettling. But I think the most, I'm just going to assume that the most reliable or the most aggressive, they're actually keeping their goods here in U.S.
Good luck. That might be the best bet. Hey, we're out of time. Thanks for joining me. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.